Hurry up, Aunt said. There are sign in rows.
Loretta dragged her sack out behind her, took her place at the start of the row she'd been assigned. When the bell rang, she bent over and went to work, plucking the soft white bowls from their spiked nests. But all she could think about was tonight. Strike meeting. Midnight. At noon, the bell rang again. Loretta straightened, tried to ease the cricks out of her neck and back, listening to the sound of men hammering. Welty stood on the scales raised platform, looking out at the men and women and children who worked themselves bloody to make him rich.
I know that some of you are talking to the union organizers, he said.
His loud voice carried across the fields.
Maybe you think you can find other jobs in other fields, or maybe you think I need you more than you need me. Let me tell you right now, that is not the case. For every one of you standing on my property, there are 10 lined up outside the fence waiting to take your job. And now, because of a few bad apples, I have had to put up fencing and hire men to guard my property, at considerable cost. So I am lowering wages another 10%. Anyone who stays agrees to that price. Anyone who leaves will never pick for me or any other grower in the valley again.
Loretta looked at her mother over the row of cotton that stood between them. The structure in the middle of the field was nearly complete. It was easy now to see what they'd been building all morning, a gun tower. Soon, one of the foremen would be up there, pacing, carrying a rifle, making sure the workers knew their place. You see, Loretta mouthed. Elsa lay awake, deep into the night, worrying about the 10% cut in wages. Across the small dark room, she heard the other rusted metal bed frame squeak. Elsa saw the shadow of her daughter in the moonlight through the open vent. Loretta quietly got out of bed. Elsa sat up, watched her daughter move furtively. She dressed and went to the cabin door, reached for the knob.
Where do you think you're going?
Elsa said. Loretta paused, turned.
There's a strike meeting tonight, in camp.
Loretta, no.
You'll have to tie me up and gag me, Mom, otherwise I'm going.
Elsa couldn't see her daughter's face clearly, but she heard the steel in her voice. As scared as Elsa was, she couldn't help feeling a flash of reluctant pride. Her daughter was so much stronger and braver than Elsa was. Grandpa Wolcott would have been proud of Loretta, too.
Then I'm going with you.
Elsa slipped into a day dress and covered her hair with a kerchief. Too lazy to lace up her shoes, she stepped into her galoshes and followed her daughter out of the cabin. Outside, moonlight set the distant cotton fields aglow, turned the white cotton bowls silver. The quiet of man was complete, unbroken, but they heard the scuttling of creatures moving in the dark, the howl of a coyote. She saw an owl perched in a high branch watching them. Elsa imagined spies and foremen everywhere, hidden in every shadow, watching for those who would dare to raise their voices in protest. This was a stupid idea, stupid and dangerous.
Mom,
hush, Elsa said, not a word. They passed the newer section of tents and turned into the laundry, a long wooden structure that held metal wash basins, long tables, and a few hand-cranked wringers. Men rarely stepped foot in the place, but now there were about 40 of them inside, standing in a tight knot. Elsa and Loretta slipped to the back of the crowd. Ike stood at the front.
"We all know why we're here," he said quietly.
There was no answer, not even a movement of feet.
They cut wages again today, and they'll do it again. Because they can. We've all seen the desperate folks pouring into the valley. They'll work for anything. They have kids to feed.
So do we, Ike,
someone said.
I know, Ralph. But we gotta stand up for ourselves or they'll destroy us.
I ain't no red, someone said.
Call it whatever you want, Gary. We deserve fair wages.
Ike said.
And we aren't going to get him without a fight.
Elsa heard the distant sound of truck engines. She saw people turn around, look behind them. Headlights.
Run!
Ike yelled. The crowd dispersed in a panic, people running away from the laundry in all directions. Elsa grabbed Loretta's hand and yanked her back toward the stinking toilets. No one else was going this way. They lurched into the shadows behind the building and hid there. Men jumped out of the trucks, holding baseball bats, sticks of wood. One had a shotgun. They formed a line and began walking through the camp, backlit by their headlights, their footsteps muffled by the chug of their engines. They beat their weapons into the palms of their hands, a steady thump, thump, thump. Elsa pressed a finger to her mouth and pulled Loretta along the fence line. When they finally made it back to the cabins, they ran for their own, slipped inside, locked the door behind them. Elsa heard footsteps coming their way. Light flashed through the cracks in the cabin. Men moved past, accompanied by the sound of baseball bats hitting empty palms. The sound came close. Thump, thump, thump. And then faded away. In the distance, someone screamed.
You see, Loretta, Elsa whispered. They'll hurt the people who threaten their business.
It was a long time before Loretta spoke, and when she did, her words were no comfort at all.
Sometimes you have to fight back, Mom.
32.
Can we drive to Relief this week, Ma?
Aunt said at the end of another long, hot, demoralizing day picking cotton. Elsa had to admit that the idea of walking to town and back after a day in the fields was hardly appealing. But these were the kinds of decisions that came back to haunt a woman when winter came.
Just this once. In fact, Aunt, if you want to, you can stay in the camp and play with your friends if you'd like.
Really? That'd be swell. I'll stay and watch him,
Loretta said. Elsa gave her daughter a pointed look.
You, I'm not letting out of my sight.
They left Aunt at the cabin and got into the truck.
Can I practice driving? Grandpa said I should keep practicing,
Loretta said.
What if there's an emergency?
An emergency that requires you to drive?
It's possible.
Fine.
Loretta got behind the wheel. Elsa climbed into the passenger seat. Lord, but it was hot. Loretta started the engine.
You remember how to work the pedals? Do it slowly, carefully. Find the...
The truck lurched forward and died.
Sorry,
Loretta said.
Try again. Take your time.
Loretta worked the pedals, put the truck in first gear. They moved slowly forward. The engine revved.
Second gear, Loretta,
Elsa said. Loretta tried again and finally got it into second. They drove in fits and starts down the road to the state relief office, where there was already a crowd of people waiting. The line snaked out the door and through the parking lot and down the block. Elsa and Loretta got in line. As they stood there, the sun began to set slowly, gilding the valley for a few beautiful moments before the sky darkened. They were almost to the head of the line when a pair of police cars drove into the parking lot. Four uniformed policemen exited the vehicles. Moments later, a Welty truck drove up and Mr. Welty stepped out. People in line turned to look, but no one said anything. Two of the policemen and Mr. Welty cut to the head of the line and strode into the relief office. They didn't come back out. Elsa clung to Loretta's hand. In normal times, the folks in line might have turned to one another, asked what was going on, but these weren't ordinary times. There were spies everywhere. People wanted to take a place at Welty, wanted a job. Elsa finally stepped into the small, hot office where a pretty young woman sat at the desk with the file box full of residents' names in front of her. Welty stood beside the woman, appeared almost to be looming over the poor girl. Two policemen stood beside him, hands rested on their gun belts. Elsa eased Loretta away and walked up to the desk alone.
Her throat was so dry she had to clear it twice to speak. Elsa Martinelli, April 1935. Welty pointed at Elsa's red card.
Address Welty Farms. She's on the list.
The woman looked at Elsa with compassion. I'm sorry, ma'am. No state relief for anyone who is capable of picking cotton. But if you can pick, you have to, she said. It's the new policy. But don't worry, as soon as cotton season is over, you'll be put back on the relief rolls. Wait a minute. Now the state is cutting my relief? But I'm a resident, and I am picking cotton.
We want to make sure you keep picking it, Welty said.
Mr. Welty, she said, please, we need...
Next, Welty said loudly.
Elsa couldn't believe this new cruelty. People needed this relief to feed their children, even if they did pick cotton. Have you no shame?
Next, he said again.
A policeman came up to physically move Elsa out of the line. She stumbled away, felt Loretta steady her. Elsa stepped out of the relief office, what a joke that title was, and stared at the long line of people, many of whom didn't yet know their relief had been cut. So the state was helping the growers avoid a strike by cutting relief to people who were already barely surviving. She heard a shout and turned. Two policemen slammed a man against the building wall, said,
Where's tonight's meeting? Where is it?
They shoved the man into the wall again.
How are you going to feed your family from San Quentin? Elsa!
She saw Jeb Dewey rushing toward her. He looked frantic. Jeb, what's wrong?
It's Jean. She's sick. Can you help?
I'll drive, Elsa said, already running toward the truck. Elsa drove out to the old squatters' camp and parked near the Dewey's truck. She and Jeb and Loretta got out. A wood and metal roof had been built over the bed. Another roof extended out to the side, created a covered cooking area where the children now sat. Jean lay on a mattress in the back of the truck.
Tell us what to do, Jeb said.
Elsa climbed up into the truck bed and knelt beside Jean.
Hey, you.
Elsa,
Jean said, her voice almost too soft to be heard. Her eyes had a glassy, unfocused look.
I told Jeb you'd be a relief today.
Elsa placed a hand on Jean's forehead.
You're burning up.
She yelled to Jeb, Get me some water. Moments later, Loretta handed Elsa a cup of warm water.
Here, Mom.
Elsa took the cup. Cradling Jean's neck, she helped her sip water.
Come on, Jean, take a drink.
Jean tried to push her away.
Come on, Jean.
Elsa forced the water down Jean's throat. Jean looked up at her.
It's bad this time.
Elsa looked down at Jeb.
You got any aspirin?
Nope.
Loretta, Elsa said, take the truck to the company store, buy us some aspirin, and a thermometer. The keys are in the ignition.
Loretta ran off. Elsa settled herself in closer to Jean, held her in her arms, and stroked her hot brow.
It's the typhoid, I reckon, Jean said. You should probably stay away.
I'm not that easy to get rid of. Just ask my husband. He had to run off in the middle of the night.
Jean smiled weakly.
He was a fool. Jack said the same thing. So did Rafe's mom, come to think of it. I sure could use some of that gin we've been talking about.
Elsa ran her fingers through Jean's damp hair. Heat radiated from Jean's body to Elsa's.
I could sing. Please don't.
The women smiled at each other, but Elsa saw Jean's fear.
It'll be okay. You're strong.
Jean closed her eyes and fell asleep in Elsa's arms. Elsa held Jean, stroked her hot brow, and whispered quiet words of encouragement until she heard the rumbling sound of the truck returning. Thank God. Loretta drove up and parked. She opened the truck's door and got out, banging the door shut behind her.
Mom,
she yelled.
The store wasn't open.
Elsa craned her neck to see Loretta.
Why not?
Probably because of the strike talk. They want to remind us how much we need them. Pigs.
Jean's body suddenly arched and stiffened. Her eyes rolled back in her head. Her body began to shake violently. Elsa held her friend until she stilled.
There's no aspirin, Jean, Elsa said.
Jean's eyes fluttered open.
Don't fret none, Elsa. Just let me.
No, Elsa said sharply. I'll be right back. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Jean's breathing slowed.
I might go dancing.
Elsa eased Jean's head back and got out of the truck.
You stay here, she said to Loretta. Try to get Jean to drink more water. Keep a wet rag on her forehead. Don't let her kick the covers away.
She turned to Jeb.
I'll be right back.
Where you going? Jeb asked.
I'm getting her aspirin.
Where? You got any money to buy some?
No, Elsa said tightly. They make sure we never have money. Stay here.
She ran to the truck and started it up, drove out to the main road. At the hospital, she walked across the parking lot and pushed through the doors, leaving dirty brown footprints across the clean floor as she walked to the front desk, where a woman sat alone, playing solitaire.
I need help, Elsa said. Please, I know you won't let us come to the hospital, but if you could just give me some aspirin, it would be such a help. My friend has a fever, really high. It could be typhoid. Help us. Please. Please.
The woman straightened in her chair, craned her neck to look up and down the hall.
You know that's contagious, right? There's a nurse at the new government tent camp in Arvin. Ask her for help. She treats your kind.
Your kind. Enough is goddamned enough. Elsa walked out of the hospital, went back to the truck, and grabbed Aunt's baseball bat from out of the bed. Carrying it, she walked across the parking lot, trying to stay calm. This time, she barged through the doors, took one look at the woman sneering up at her, and slammed the baseball bat down on the front desk hard enough to dent the wood. The woman screamed.
Ah, good. I have your attention. I need some aspirin, Elsa said calmly.
The woman spun around, yanked open a cabinet. With shaking hands, she started pawing through medicine.
Darn Okies, the woman muttered.
Elsa smashed a lamp, then the phone. The woman grasped a pair of bottles and thrust them at Elsa.
You people are animals. So are you, ma'am. So are you.
Elsa took the aspirin. She was almost to the front door when a big man came lumbering down the hallway toward her.
Stop her, Fred! She's a criminal!
The woman at the desk yelled. He blocked the door. Elsa stepped closer to the man in the brown security uniform, holding the bat down at her side. Her heart was thundering, but strangely, she felt calm, in control even. She had the medicine, and no one was going to stop her from getting it to Jean.
How badly do you want to stop me, Fred?
The man's gaze softened.
The missus and I came here from Indiana about 5 years ago. It was a hell of a lot easier then. I'm sorry for the way you're treated.
He pulled out a $5 bill.
Will this help?
Elsa almost cried at the small kindness.
Thank you.
Now go. Alice is probably calling the coppers already.
Elsa sprinted out of the hospital, threw the baseball bat into the truck bed, then started the engine and stomped on the gas. The old truck fishtailed in the gravel and slowly straightened out on the dark road. She turned onto the road to the squatter's camp and pulled up in front of the Dewey's truck. She found Jeb in the bed of the truck with Jean, cradling his wife in his arms. The children stood with Loretta beneath the wooden overhang close to the side of the truck. The boys held the little girl's hands.
She keeps asking for gin, Jeb said, looking bereft and confused. She don't drink.
Elsa climbed up into the bed of the truck, settled in on Jean's other side.
Hey, you, bad girl. I've got some aspirin.
Jean's eyes fluttered open.
I hear you're making trouble, demanding gin, Elsa said.
One martini before I die. Don't seem too much to ask.
Elsa helped Jean swallow 2 aspirin and drink a glass of water, and then stroked her friend's hot forehead.
Don't you give up, Jean.
Jean stared up at Elsa, breathing heavily, sweating.
You dance, Elsa,
she said, almost too quietly to be heard.
For both of us.
Jean squeezed Elsa's hand.
I loved you, girlfriend.
Not past tense. Please. She heard Jeb start to cry.
I love you too, Jean,
Elsa whispered. Jean slowly turned her head to look at her husband.
Now, where are my babies, Jeb?
Elsa had to force herself to move away, get out of the truck. The 4 Dewey children climbed up and gathered around Jean. Elsa heard whispering. Elroy said, I will, Ma, as the girls cried. And then Jean's broken voice,
I had so much more to say to y'all.
Loretta touched Elsa's shoulder.
Are you okay?
Elsa's answer was a primal scream. Once she started, she couldn't stop. Loretta pulled Elsa into her arms and held her while she cried for all of it. The way they lived, the dreams they'd lost, the future they'd so blindly believed in. For the children who would grow up not knowing Jean, her humor, her gentleness, her steel, her hopes for them. Elsa cried until she felt emptied inside. She pulled away from Loretta, who looked frightened.
I'm sorry,
Elsa said, wiping her eyes.
Sometimes it just breaks you,
Loretta said.
It helps to get mad.
You're right,
Elsa said. Enough.
If I wanted to find Mr. Valen and his communist friends, would you know where to look?
I think so.
Where?
There's a barn where they make flyers and stuff, out at the end of Willow Road.
Okay.
Elsa drew in a deep breath and released it slowly.
Okay, then.
Later, when night fell across the valley and stars came out to blanket the sky, Elsa quietly herded her children out of the cabin and toward the truck. None of them spoke as they climbed into the vehicle and drove away. Each understood the danger of what they'd decided to do tonight.
Turn here,
Loretta said. Elsa turned onto a dirt road that cut through brown, uncultivated fields. At the end of the road, a gray-brown barn stood next to an old ranch house with broken windows and boarded-up doors. There were 6 or 7 automobiles parked out front. Elsa parked next to a dusty Packard. She and Loretta and Aunt got out of the truck and walked toward the barn. Loretta pushed open the half-broken door. The interior was lit by lanterns. There were several tables set up on the straw-covered dirt floor. Chairs were placed randomly along the walls. At least 12 people were at work, some at typewriters, others at mimeograph machines. Cigarette smoke thickened the air, but didn't obliterate the sweet smell of hay. Elsa and the children walked among the communists. No one seemed to notice them. Elsa saw a paper come out of a mimeograph machine. Workers Unite was the bold headline. She smelled an odd odor of ink and metal. They passed a small, dark-haired woman wearing spectacles who paced as she dictated to another woman who was typing.
We cannot allow the rich to get richer while the poor get poorer. How can we call ourselves the land of the free when people are living on the streets and dying of hunger? Radical change requires radical methods.
Loretta elbowed Elsa, who looked up. Jack was coming toward them.
Hello, ladies, he said, staring intently at Elsa. Loretta, he said, Natalia is at the mimeograph machine. She could use some help.
You too, Aunt, Elsa said. Stay with your sister.
Jack led Elsa outside to a fire pit around which was arranged a collection of mismatched furniture. Several ashtrays overflowed with bent cigarette butts.
So communists sit around a fire and smoke like everyone else, Elsa said.
We are almost human that way.
He moved closer.
What happened?
Jean died. There was no way for us to save her. The company store was closed to teach us a lesson, and the hospital wouldn't help. I even used a baseball bat to get their attention. All I got was some aspirin. Oh, and they culled our names from the relief rolls today. If you can pick cotton, you have to. No state relief.
We heard. The growers bullied the state into it. They're calling it the no-work, no-eat policy. They're afraid that relief will allow you to feed your children while you strike for better wages.
Elsa crossed her arms. All my life, I've been told to make no noise, don't want too much, be grateful for any scrap that came my way. And I've done that. I thought if I just did what women are supposed to do and played by the rules, it would, I don't know, change. But the way we're treated?
It's unfair, he said.
It's wrong, she said. This isn't who we are in America.
No.
A strike.
She said the frightening word quietly.
Can it work?
Maybe.
She was grateful for his honesty. They'll hurt us for trying.
Yeah, he said. But life is more than what happens to us, Elsa. We have choices to make.
I'm not a brave woman.
And yet here you are, standing at the edge of battle.
His words touched a chord in her. My grandfather was a Texas Ranger. He used to tell me that courage was a lie. It was just fear that you ignored. She looked at him. Well, I'm scared.
We're all scared, he said.
I have children to worry about, children I have to feed and clothe and keep safe. I can't risk their lives.
He said nothing, and she knew why. He was letting her say it.
They're already at risk, she said. They can't be taught that this is what we deserve, that this is America. I have to teach them to stand up for themselves.
Elsa felt both a stunning sense of relief, almost of coming home, finding herself, and a deep, abiding fear. Courage is fear you ignore, but how did one do that, really, in practical terms?
The rifle tower they built in the field, that's to scare us, right? What we're doing, a strike, it's legal.
It's legal. Hell, it's the very essence of America. We were built on the right to protest, but laws are enforced by the government, by the police. You've seen how they support big business.
Elsa nodded. What do we do?
First, we need to get out the word. We've set a strike meeting for Friday, but it's dangerous even to tell people, let alone to show up for the meeting.
Everything is dangerous, she said. So what?
He laid a hand along her cheek. She leaned into his touch, taking strength and comfort from it. 33. In the dark just before the dawn, Loretta opened the cabin door and stepped outside. Last night's gathering of the Workers' Alliance had energized her, galvanized her. The communists were working hard to bring about a strike, but they needed people like Loretta to spread the word through the camps. The communists couldn't do it on their own.
It's dangerous, though, Natalia had said to Loretta last night. Don't forget this. When I was a girl, I saw revolution up close. Blood runs in the streets. Don't forget for one moment that the state has all the power, money and weapons and manpower.
We have heart and desperation, had been Loretta's answer.
Yeah, Natalia had said, exhaling smoke. And brains.
so use yours.
Loretta closed the door behind her and walked out into the camp. She could hear people readying for the day, serving food, packing lunches. There was a long line at the toilets. But the quiet was new and unnerving. No one laughed or even talked. Fear had moved into the camp. Everyone knew they were being watched by people whose loyalty was to the grower, not to the workers. Unfortunately, you never knew who the traitor was until you said the wrong thing to the wrong person and a knock at your door came in the middle of the night. They had heard the cries of families being hauled out of camp. The first colors of sunrise cast light on the coiled barbed wire that topped the new fencing. She walked toward the line for the toilets and waited her turn. Afterward, she saw Ike filling his canteen at the water spout outside the laundry. Loretta tried to look completely casual as she moved toward him, but she may have failed. She was filled with adrenaline, scared and exhilarated and excited. She stepped in close to him, said, "Friday," without stopping. "The barn on Willow Road, 8 o'clock, pass the word." She kept going, didn't even look back to see if he heard. She walked back to the cabin, very slowly, expecting every minute to be stopped. She closed the door behind her. Mom and Aunt looked at her. "Well," Mom said quietly. Loretta nodded. "I told Ike." "Good," Mom said. "Let's go pick cotton." That night, after another long, hot day in the fields, there was a letter from Tony and Rose to cheer them all. After supper, the children climbed into bed with Elsa, and she opened the envelope and withdrew that letter. It had been written on the backside of Elsa's last letter to them. No reason to waste paper.
"Dearest ones, it has been a hot, dry summer. The good news is that the wind and dust have given us a respite. No dust storms for 10 days. Not enough to call an end to them, but in answer to prayers anyway. August and the first half of September were entirely unpleasant. All we did, it seems, was sweep, but these last few days have so far been kinder. Also, the government has finally realized that the help we most need is water, and it is being delivered by the truckload. We pray there will be a crop of winter wheat, at least enough to feed our 2 new cows and the horse. But hope is hard to come by. Sending you all much love. Miss you terribly. Love, Rose and Tony."
"Do you think we will ever see them again, Mom?"
Loretta asked in the silence that followed Elsa's reading of the letter. Elsa leaned back against the rusted metal bed frame. Aunt resettled himself, laid his head on her lap. She stroked his hair. Loretta sat opposite Elsa, against the narrow foot of the bed.
"Remember that house I stopped at in Dalhart on the day we left for California? The big one with the broken window?"
Elsa nodded.
"It was big, all right. I grew up there, in a house that had no heart. My family rejected me, is, I guess, the best way to put it. Looks mattered to my family, and my unattractiveness was a fatal flaw. I'm not fishing for compliments, Loretta, and God knows I am too old for lies. I'm answering your question. This one, and one you haven't asked in a while, about me and your grandparents and your father. Anyway, my point is that as a girl, I was lonely. I could never understand what I'd done to deserve my isolation. I tried so hard to be lovable."
Elsa drew in a deep breath, released it.
"I thought everything had changed when I met your father, and it did, for me, but not for him. He always wanted more than life on the farm, always, as you know."
Loretta nodded.
"I loved your dad. I did. But it wasn't enough for him. And now I realize it wasn't enough for me either. He deserved better, and so did I."
As she said the unexpected words, Elsa felt them reshape her somehow.
But you know how my life really changed? It wasn't marriage. It was the farm. Rose and Tony. I found a place to belong, people who loved me, and they became the home I'd dreamed about as a girl. And then you came along and taught me how big love could be. I treated you like you had the plague. Elsa smiled for a few years. But before all of that, you couldn't stand to be apart. You cried for me at nap time, said you couldn't sleep without me. I'm sorry, Loretta said. For no sorries. We fought, we struggled, we hurt each other, so what? That's what love is, I think. It's all of it. Tears, anger, joy, struggle. Mostly, it's durable. It lasts. Never once in all of it, the dust, the drought, the fights with you, never once did I stop loving you or Aunt or the farm. Elsa laughed. So, my long-winded answer to your question is this. Rose and Tony and the farm are home. We will see them all again. Someday.
They were crazy, Loretta said. Your other family, I mean. And they missed out.
On what?
You. They never saw how special you are.
Elsa smiled. That's maybe the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Loretta.
On Friday evening, after another long day of picking cotton, Elsa and her children snuck out of camp and drove to the end of Willow Road for the strike meeting. Inside the barn, typewriters clattered. People talked loudly and moved about. Communists, mostly. Not many of the workers were here. Jack saw them in the doorway and came over.
The growers are getting nervous, he said. I heard Welty is fit to be tied.
The camp was full of men with guns last night. They didn't threaten us, but we got the message, Loretta said.
We can hardly blame people for staying away, Jack said.
The Brennans ain't coming, Aunt said. They said we're crazy to come.
We're not on grower land. There's no law saying we can't talk, Loretta said.
Sometimes legal rights don't matter as much as they should, Jack said.
Natalia walked up to Jack. As usual, she was impeccably dressed in black pants and a fitted tan blazer with a white silk blouse buttoned to the throat. It was little wonder Loretta idolized the woman. In the midst of a dangerous meeting, she managed to look glamorous and calm. How did a woman become so steady?
Come, she said, taking Jack by the arm. All of you.
Natalia led them to the barn door. In the field between the barn and the road, Elsa saw a steady line of vehicles driving toward the barn. One after another, cars parked out front. Doors opened. People stepped out, gathered uncertainly. More arrived. More people came on foot across the bare grass pasture. Elsa saw the way folks moved as they congregated, nervously, eyes darting back to the road and out across the empty fields. By 8 o'clock, Elsa estimated the crowd at over 500. More people walked up the road, merged into the audience gathered in front of the barn. They talked among themselves, but quietly. Everyone was afraid to be there, afraid of the consequences of just listening to talk of a strike.
You should talk to them, Jack said to Elsa.
She laughed.
Me? Why would anyone listen to me?
You know these people. They'd listen to you.
Go on, she said, giving him a shove. Convince them the way you convinced me.
Jack hauled a table out from the barn and set it in front of the big double doors, then jumped up on it. The crowd stilled. Elsa looked out at the familiar faces, folks who'd come from the Midwest or the South, Texas and the Great Plains, folks who'd worked hard all of their lives and still wanted that, who had fallen on such inexplicably hard times that they were confused, undone. All of them thought, or had thought, as Elsa had, that if they could just get an even break, a chance, they could right the ship of their lives.
8 years ago, Mexicans picked almost all of the crops in this great valley, Jack said.
They came across the border, moved into these fields, and picked the crops and moved on. February for peas in Napomo, June for apricots in Santa Clara, grapes in August in Fresno, and September here for cotton. They came, they picked, and they returned home for the winter. Invisible to the locals at every stage, until the crash of 29 broke the system and made Californians afraid for their jobs. They feared who Americans always fear, the outsider. So the state cracked down on illegal immigrants and called the Mexicans criminals and deported them. By 31, the majority of them were gone or in hiding. It would have been a catastrophe for the agriculture business, but then,
Jack held out his arms,
the Dust Bowl, the drought, the Great Depression. Millions lost their jobs and their homes. You came west, needing jobs, just wanting to put food on your tables and feed your families. You took the Mexicans' places in the fields. Now, your people make up 90% of the pickers. But you don't want to be unseen, do you? You came to live here, to put down roots, to be Californians.
We're Americans, someone yelled from the crowd. We got every right to be here.
Rights, Jack said, looking out at them. They matter in America, don't they?
Yes.
Here, you have the right to be paid for your labor and fairly. You have the right to a living wage, but you have to fight for it. They won't just give it to you. They care more about their wallets than your survival. We have to join together, men, women, and children who pick their crops. We have to band together and rise up and say no more. We won't be treated as worthless. We are going to make a stand on the 6th of October. Pass the word. We will be peaceful. That's critical. This is a protest, not a brawl. You will go into the cotton fields and sit down. Simply that. If we can slow the means of production even for a day, we will get their attention.
Their attention is dangerous, someone yelled. They'll want to hurt us.
They hurt you every day. We have to remember what we're fighting for, Jack said. On the 6th, my comrades are leading strikes at every field and farm we can throughout the valley. If we can strike everywhere at once, we can... Sirens cut him off. Police, barreling up the road in cruisers, lights flashing.
Coppers! Someone yelled.
Strike on the 6th, Jack said. Spread the word, all of us on one day, every field!
Behind the police cars were trucks filled with men standing in back holding bats and shovels and clubs. A man on a loudspeaker standing in the back of one of the trucks said,
Please disperse. You are engaged in illegal activity.
The vehicles pulled up and parked. Men jumped down, carrying their weapons. The crowd broke apart. People screamed and pushed one another aside.
Loretta!
Elsa couldn't see her children in the pandemonium.
Aunt!
People ran in all directions. Those who had driven jumped in their cars and drove away. The others ran for their lives across the fields. Elsa saw Loretta and Aunt clinging to each other, being carried forward by the tide of people. She started to run for them, but something hit her in the head, hard, and she fell to the ground, unconscious. Elsa came awake in stages. Her mouth was dry. She was thirsty. The last thing she remembered was,
Loretta! Aunt!
She sat up so fast she felt dizzy. Jack was beside her.
I'm here, Elsa, he said.
She was in bed, but not in a room she'd ever seen before. There was an empty chair beside the bed. Jack handed her a glass of water and sat down in the chair.
Where are my children?
Natalia got them to your cabin. She drove your truck back.
How do you know this?
I told her to. Natalia never fails. She will be in the cabin with the door locked. She will shoot anyone who tries to harm them.
Will they know I'm safe?
Natalia knows you are with me, so yes. She trusts me as I trust her.
Quite a relationship you two have.
We've been through a lot together.
Elsa downed the water and slumped back. There was a ringing in her ears and a painful throbbing in the back of her head. She touched it gingerly. Her fingertips came back bloodied.
What happened?
One of their thugs hit you.
Elsa saw the bloody, scraped ridge of Jack's knuckles.
You punched him?
And then some.
He put a wash rag in a basin of water, wrung it out, and placed it on her forehead. The coolness soothed.
How long ago?
An hour, maybe. They got what they wanted. People are scared to strike.
They were scared before, Jack, but they showed up. Was anyone besides me hurt?
Several. A few were arrested. They burned down the barn, took all our mimeograph machines and typewriters.
Elsa glanced around the small room, saw the Spartan decor. An old dresser, a nightstand with a brass lamp on it, a rag rug. Stacks of papers and books and magazines and newspapers lined every wall, covered most surfaces. No mirror, no closet, just a few men's clothes hanging from hooks on the wall. It all had a very temporary look. Or maybe this was how men lived without women in their lives.
Where are we?
She asked, but she knew.
I sleep here when I'm in town.
He paused.
Interesting, you don't say you live here.
My life, it's more of an idea, a cause. Or it has been.
What do you mean?
For years, I've been fighting to make the rich pay their workers a living wage. I hate the inequity between the haves and the have-nots. I've been beaten and gone to prison for it. I've seen my comrades beaten. But tonight, when I saw you get hit...
What?
I thought, it's not worth that.
He looked at her.
You've unbalanced me, Elsa.
Elsa felt a sense of connection, but didn't know what to do with it, how to reach for him without humiliating herself.
I'm not myself around you either,
was all she could think of to say. He reached for her hand, held it. The silence became awkward. He seemed to be waiting for her to say something, but what?
There's blood on your face and in your hair. Maybe you'd like to bathe before I take you back to your cabin, so the kids don't see you like this.
He helped her out of bed and steadied her as they walked into the small bathroom. Jack turned on the water in the porcelain bathtub and then left her alone. She undressed and stepped into the bath. With a sigh, she slid down into the hot water. It relaxed her as nothing had in a long time. She washed her hair and body and felt rejuvenated. But all the while, she was thinking of Jack. Do you know how beautiful you are? She had never forgotten him saying those remarkable words, and now he'd claimed to be unbalanced by her. Certainly, she was equally undone by him. She stepped out of the tub and dried off, then wrapped the towel around her naked body and reached for her ragged dress. She stopped. When she put that dress back on, she would be Elsa again. She didn't want that. At least, she didn't want to be the Elsa who stayed silent and accepted less and thought it her due. She'd rather reach for love and fail than never reach at all. She turned the door handle slowly. Even as she opened the door, she couldn't quite believe she was doing this. She, who had ached for her husband's touch for more than a dozen years, but never once had the courage to reach for him, was going to walk out of this bathroom wearing only a towel. It felt like the most courageous act of her life. She opened the door and walked into the bedroom. Jack stood against the wall, arms crossed. When he saw her, he uncrossed his arms and walked toward her. She dropped the towel, trying not to be ashamed of her scrawny body. He stopped, then moved closer, said her name softly. Elsa couldn't believe the look in his eyes, but it was there. Desire. For her. Are you sure? He asked, touching a lock of her hair, lifting it from her bare shoulder.
I'm sure, she said.
He took her hand and led her to the bed. She reached for the lamp to turn it off. He stopped her, said,
Don't,
in a rough voice.
I want to see you, Elsa.
He threw his shirt and undershirt aside, kicked off his pants, and took her into his arms.
Tell me what you want,
he murmured, his lips on hers. He was asking for words she didn't know, answers she didn't have.
Maybe you want me to kiss you here, or here?
Oh my God,
she said, and he laughed, kissing her again. His touch was magic, created a need she could neither control nor deny, made her desperate for more. His hands were all over her, touching her with an intimacy she'd never imagined. The world disappeared, spiraled down to nothing except her desire and her need. No one had ever known her like this. He showed her the power of her own body, the beauty of her need. She dared with him all the things she'd always dreamed of. Relief came in waves. She felt ethereal, bodiless, at one with the air in the room, floating. When she finally came back to herself, and that was what it felt like, becoming corporeal again after being nothing but need, she opened her eyes. Jack lay on his side, staring at her. She leaned boldly forward, kissed his lips, his temple. Somewhere in all of it, she realized she was crying.
Don't cry, my love,
he whispered, drawing her into his arms, holding her close.
There's more where that came from. I promise you, this is just the beginning. My love.
You are going to wear a groove in the floor, Natalia said, exhaling smoke.
Loretta stopped pacing.
It's been 2 hours. Maybe she is dead.
Aunt shot up.
You think she's dead?
Loretta shook her head. Stupid.
No, Auntie, I don't.
She'll be back, Natalia said. Jack will see that she is returned.
Loretta heard footsteps outside.
Aunt, she said harshly. Come over here.
He darted to her side, pressed up against her hip. She put a hand on his shoulder protectively. Natalia got to her feet, stood in front of them as the door opened. Jack and Mom walked in.
Mommy!
Aunt hurled himself at their mother.
Whoa, Mom said. Slow down, buddy. I'm fine.
She leaned down and kissed the top of his head. Jack said,
She should sleep now.
He helped Mom over to bed and got her settled in. Aunt immediately climbed up onto the foot of her bed and curled up like a puppy. Loretta, Natalia, and Jack moved toward the door.
Is she really okay?
Loretta asked.
Yes, he answered. A nasty blow to the back of the head, but it will take more than that to slow your mother down. She's a warrior.
It's dangerous,
Loretta said, realizing for the first time how true those words were. Everyone had told her, but she hadn't truly understood until tonight. They were risking everything to strike, not just their jobs. It could go really badly.
You see now, Jack said. A fight like this isn't romantic. I was in San Francisco when the National Guard went after strikers with bayonets.
People died that day, Natalia said. Strikers. They called it Bloody Thursday.
We have to fight them, though, Loretta said, with whatever we have, like when Mom took the baseball bat into the hospital to get aspirin for Jean.
Yeah, Jack said, looking grim. We do.
34. On the morning of the 6th, just before dawn, Elsa and the children climbed into one of the waiting, welty trucks. The workers were quiet, subdued. People were reluctant to make eye contact. Elsa didn't know if that meant they were with the strike or against it, but they all knew about it. Strike talk was everywhere. Careful words spoken in dark corners. Everyone who worked in the valley knew a strike was happening today, which meant the growers knew.
"I want you and Aunt always in my sight," Elsa said as the truck pulled up in front of the cotton field.
Jack's truck was parked in the middle of the road. He, Natalia, and several of their comrades waited for the strikers, held picket signs. The gate to the field was open.
"Fair pay! Fair pay! Fair pay!"
Jack chanted as the workers climbed down from the truck. Several cars and trucks appeared on the road behind Jack and Natalia, drove slowly forward. In minutes, Jack and his comrades would be caught between the strikers in front of them and the growers behind them, hemmed in on either side by fenced cotton fields. The workers stopped en masse, stood clustered together, facing the communists. The first car stopped behind Jack's truck. Three men got out. Each one held a rifle. A truck stopped beside it. Two more men jumped onto the road. A third truck rolled into place, and Mr. Welty stepped out, holding a shotgun. He walked forward, stopped about 3 feet behind Jack, and faced the strikers.
"Wages are lowering today to 75 cents for 100 pounds of cotton," Welty said. "If you don't take the wage and pick, there are plenty who will."
Five armed men fanned out behind him, guns at the ready. Jack turned to face Welty, walked boldly toward the owner, went toe-to-toe with him, became the tip of the arrow of the strikers.
"They won't pick for that," Jack said.
"You don't even work for me, you lion red," Welty said.
"I'm trying to help these workers, that's all.
Your greed is un-American. They aren't going to pick for 75 cents. That's not a living wage."
Jack turned to the workers.
"He needs you to pick, but he doesn't want to pay you. What do we say?"
No one answered. Welty's men smacked their gun barrels against their palms.
"They're smarter than you are, Red," Welty said.
Elsa knew what they were supposed to do now. They all did. Jack had told them at the barn, go into the fields peaceably, sit down. If they didn't move, didn't act, this strike would be over before it began, and they would lose, and the bosses would be even stronger. Elsa placed a hand on each of her children's shoulders.
"Come on, kids, into the field."
They walked forward, moved through the crowd, and then emerged from it, three lone figures out in front, moving toward the entrance to the field. The spiked barbed wire that topped the chain-link fencing glittered in the sunlight. An armed man stood at the parapet of the gun tower, his rifle aimed at the workers.
"See," Welty said to Jack.
"This little lady knows who pays her. 75 cents is better than nothing."
Elsa walked past Jack and Welty without looking at either man. She and her children walked into the cotton field. Loretta looked back.
"No one is following us, Mom."
"Follow us," Elsa thought. "Please, don't let us be alone. It will all be for nothing then." Jack said they all needed to do it, together, to stop the means of production.
"Fair pay!" Jack shouted behind her. "Fair pay!"
The walk into the cotton field was the longest 6 minutes of Elsa's life. She took her place in a row and turned around. For a moment, the crowd of pickers stood there, motionless, staring at Elsa and her children, alone in the field. Ike stepped forward first, pushed his way out of the crowd, and began walking toward the open gate.
"Look, Mom,"
Loretta said under her breath, as one by one the workers followed Ike, walked into the fields, and filled the rows. As one, the workers turned to face Welty.
"Get to work, men!"
Welty yelled, as if there were only men here. Elsa stared out at the people standing in the rows of cotton, her people, her kind. Their courage humbled her.
"You know what to do!"
Elsa yelled. The workers sat down. As dusk drew near, the strikers stood up and walked out of the fields, under the angry gazes of the boss and his men.
The strikers had filled the fields all day, sitting quietly. Jack waited for them down the road. He had a bloody lip and a blackening eye. Still, he gave the group a smile.
Good job, everyone. We got their attention. Tomorrow, we need to get an even earlier start. They'll be ready this time, and they won't send trucks to pick you up. We'll meet at 4 a.m. outside the El Centro Hotel.
They began the long walk home, all of them together. Loretta was jubilant.
Not a single bowl of cotton was picked today. That'll teach Mr. Fat Cat not to take advantage of us anymore, she said.
Elsa walked beside Jack. She wished she could feel as happy as her daughter did, but her worry outpaced her enthusiasm. She could tell most of the strikers felt as she did. Looking at Jack's bruised face, she said,
You certainly got their attention, I see.
He moved closer. His fingers brushed hers as they walked.
When a man resorts to violence, he's scared, Jack said. That's a good sign.
Did we make it worse for ourselves?
They'll be ready for us tomorrow, Jack said.
How long will all this last? She asked. Without relief, we are going to be in trouble, Jack. They won't give us credit at the store if we don't pick, and none of us has any savings. We can't hang on for long.
I know, Jack said.
They came to the Welty Growers' camp. The workers who lived there turned in, heading back to their tents and cabins. Loretta and Aunt ran off ahead. Others kept walking down the road. Jack and Elsa stopped, looked at each other.
You were amazing today,
he said quietly.
All I did was sit down.
It was bold, and you know it.
I told you they'd listen to you.
She touched the swollen purple skin below his eye.
You need to be careful tomorrow.
I'm always careful.
He gave her a smile that should have been comforting, but wasn't. Later that night, Elsa stood at the hot plate stirring a pot of beans. Someone pounded on the door so hard the walls rattled.
Kids, get behind me, she said,
and then went to the door, opening it. A man stood there holding a hammer.
Well, well, he said. If it isn't the woman at the front of the line, the Red's whore.
Elsa shielded the children with her body.
What do you want?
He shoved a piece of paper at her.
Can you read?
She yanked the notice out of his hand and read it. To John Doe and Mary Doe, whose true names are unknown, you will please take notice that you are required to vacate and surrender up to me the premises now occupied by you. Said premises being known as California Lands Unit 10. This is intended to be 3 days' notice to vacate said property on the grounds that you are in unlawful possession thereof, and unless you do vacate the same as the above stated, the proper action at law will be brought against you. Thomas Welty, owner, Welty Farms.
You're evicting us? How am I here unlawfully? Elsa said. I pay $6 a month for this cabin.
These are pickers' cabins, the man said. Did you pick today?
No, but...
Two more nights, lady, the man said. Then we come back here and take all your shit and throw it in the dirt. You've been notified.
He left. Elsa stood in the open doorway, stared out at the pandemonium in camp. A dozen men moved ominously forward, pounding notices on doors, kicking doors open, handing out eviction notices, and nailing them on posts near every tent.
They can't do that, Loretta screamed. Pigs!
Elsa yanked her children inside, slammed the door shut.
They can't evict us for exercising our rights as Americans, Loretta said. Can they?
Elsa saw when it settled into place for Loretta, when she really understood the risk. As bad as ditch bank living had been before, they'd had a tent at least. Now, if they got kicked out of here, they had nothing. The growers knew all of this, knew tomorrow it would be harder for the workers not to pick, and harder still the day after that. How long could hungry, homeless, starving people stand up for an idea? Elsa woke to a hand clamped over her mouth.
Elsa, it's me.
Jack. She sat up. He took his hand away from her mouth.
What's wrong?
She whispered.
There's talk of trouble. I want you and the kids out of the camp tonight.
Yes, they evicted all of us today. I think that's just the beginning.
She threw back the covers and got out of bed. His hand slid down her side in a quick caress. Elsa closed the window vent, then lit a kerosene lamp and went to wake the children. Aunt grumbled and kicked at her and rolled over.
What?
Loretta said, yawning.
Jack says there may be trouble tomorrow. He wants us to move out.
Of the cabin?
Loretta said. In the faint light, Elsa saw the fear in her daughter's eyes.
Yes,
Elsa said.
All right, then.
Loretta elbowed her brother.
Get up, Aunt. We're on the move.
They packed their few belongings quickly and stowed the boxes in the back of the truck, along with the crates and buckets they'd salvaged in the last few months. At last, Elsa and Loretta stood at the door, both staring at the two rusted metal bed frames with mattresses and the small hot plate, thinking what luxuries they were.
We can move back in when the strike is over,
Loretta said. Elsa didn't answer, but she knew they wouldn't live here again. They left the cabin and walked out to their truck. The children climbed into the back, and Elsa got into the driver's seat. Jack took his place beside her.
Ready?
He said.
I guess.
She started the engine, but didn't turn on the headlights. The truck grumbled down the road. Elsa parked in front of the boarded-up El Centro Hotel, where they'd stayed during the flood. Jack unlocked the heavy chain from the front door and led them inside. The lobby stank of cigarette smoke and sweat. People had been here, and recently. In the dark, Jack led them up the stairs and stopped at the first closed door on the second floor.
There are two beds in here, Loretta and Aunt.
Loretta nodded tiredly, let her half-sleeping brother angle against her.
Don't turn on the lights, Jack said. We'll come get you in the morning for the strike. Elsa, your room is next door.
Thank you.
She squeezed his hand and let him go, then got the kids settled in their separate beds. In no time, Aunt was asleep. She could hear his breathing. It struck her, with painful clarity, that this simple sound was the very essence of her responsibility. Their lives depended on her, and she was letting them strike tomorrow.
You're wearing your worried face,
Loretta said when Elsa sat down on the bed beside her.
It's my love face,
Elsa said, stroking her daughter's hair.
I'm proud of you, Loretta.
You're scared about tomorrow.
Elsa should have been ashamed that Loretta saw her fears so clearly, but she wasn't. Maybe she was tired of hiding from people, of thinking she wasn't good enough. She'd filled that well for years, and now it was empty. The weight of it was gone.
Yes, she said. I'm scared.
But we'll do it anyway.
Elsa smiled, thinking again of her grandfather. It had taken decades, but she finally knew exactly what he'd meant by the things he'd told her. It wasn't the fear that mattered in life. It was the choices made when you were afraid. You were brave because of your fear, not in spite of it.
Yes.
She leaned down and kissed her daughter's forehead.
Sleep well, baby girl. Tomorrow will be a big day.
Elsa left her children and went into the room next door, where Jack sat on the bed, waiting for her. A single candle burned in a brass holder on the nightstand. The few boxes that held their belongings were stacked along one wall. Jack stood. She walked boldly up to him. In his eyes, she saw love. For her. It was young, new, not deep and settled and familiar like Rose and Tony's, but love just the same, or at least the beautiful, promising start of it. All of her life she'd waited for a moment like this, yearned for it, and she would not let it pass by unnoticed, unremarked upon. Time felt incredibly precious in these hours before the strike.
I promised a girlfriend something crazy.
Oh, yeah?
She brought her hands up, linked them behind his head. I've never asked a man to dance, and I know there's no music.
Elsa,
he whispered, leaning in to kiss her, moving to a song that wasn't being played. We are the music. Elsa closed her eyes and let him lead. For you, Jean. 35. Elsa was awakened by a kiss. She opened her eyes slowly. Last night was the best night's sleep of her life, which seemed almost obscene given the circumstances. Jack leaned over her.
My comrades should be downstairs by now.
Elsa sat up, pushed the tangled hair from her eyes. How many of you are there?
Across the state, thousands. But we are fighting on many fronts. We have organizers at every field we can from here to Fresno.
He kissed her again.
See you downstairs.
Elsa got out of bed and walked, naked, over to one of the boxes that held their belongings. Burrowing through, she found her journal and the latest pencil nub Aunt had found in the school's trash can. Settling back in bed, she opened the journal to the first blank page and began to write. Love is what remains when everything else is gone. This is what I should have told my children when we left Texas, what I will tell them tonight. Not that they will understand yet. How could they? I am 40 years old, and I only just learned this fundamental truth myself. Love. In the best of times, it is a dream. In the worst of times, a salvation. I am in love. There it is. I've written it down. Soon I will say it out loud to him. I am in love. As crazy and ridiculous and implausible as it sounds, I am in love, and I am loved in return. And this, love, gives me the courage I need for today. The four winds have blown us here, people from all across the country to the very edge of this great land, and now, at last, we make our stand, fight for what we know to be right. We fight for our American dream, that it will be possible again. Jack says that I'm a warrior, and while I don't believe it, I know this. A warrior believes in an end she can't see and fights for it. A warrior never gives up. A warrior fights for those weaker than herself. It sounds like motherhood to me. Elsa closed the journal and dressed quickly, then went to the room next door. Aunt was bouncing on the bed, saying,
Look at me, Loretta! I'm flying!
Loretta ignored her brother, paced, chewing on her thumbnail. At Elsa's entrance, they both stilled.
Is it time?
Loretta asked, bright-eyed. She looked excited, ready to go. Elsa felt a clutch of worry.
Today will be...
Dangerous, Loretta said. We know. Is everyone downstairs?
I thought we should...
Talk more?
Loretta said impatiently.
We've talked plenty.
Aunt jumped off the bed, landed on bare feet beside his sister.
I'm the shadow. No one can scare me.
Okay, Elsa said. Just stay close today. I want to see you two every second. Loretta pushed Elsa toward the door while Aunt tugged on his boots, yelled,
Wait for the shadow!
The lobby was empty when the three of them got downstairs, but within minutes there was a crowd. Members of the Workers' Alliance gathered in pods. They stacked leaflets on the table and leaned picket signs against the walls. Workers from the Ditch Bank Camp and Welty Farms and the newly constructed Resettlement Administration Camp in Arvin stood silently by, looking anxious. Elsa saw Jeb and his children in the back corner and Ike with some of the Welty Camp workers. Loretta picked up a sign that read Fair Pay and stood by Natalia, whose sign read Workers Unite. Jack stood at the front of the room.
Friends and comrades, It is time. Remember our plan. Peaceable strike. We go to the fields and sit down. That is all. We hope it happens all across the state on this morning, as we hope that more workers join us. Let's go.
They filed out of the hotel and gathered in the street. There were fewer than 50 of them altogether. Natalia got into the driver's seat of Jack's truck and started the engine.